Options for Replacing Fossil Fuels, Part 4, The Overbuilding Problem. Now, the most commonly proposed ways for renewables to overcome the intermittency and unscheduled outages that were referred to in previous talks were that they could store energy they generate when they're most productive and then draw on these stores when they're less productive, when the sun's shining or when the wind's blowing, for instance. Have a diverse mix of renewable energy systems that are coordinated by some smart electronic grid management system, so that if the wind is blowing in one place, then we can draw power from another, or we can get it from the sun or the waves or whatever. Or to have fossil fuel or nuclear power stations or gas or whatever on standby to take up the slack when needed. Now, all of these solutions, unfortunately, are grossly uneconomic. So even if we're willing to and able to be able to pay for them, the result would still be unacceptably unreliable from an energy supply system perspective. Truly massive amounts of energy we would need to keep stored to keep a city or country going through long stretches of cloudy winter days. And yes, these even occur in the desert. We can have many days of essentially no insulation or the windless nights are immense. And at the same time, small energy storage, such as batteries and chemical conversion to hydrogen or ammonia, or even pumped hydropower and compressed air, is currently just too expensive to be viable on a large scale. And what's more, to deliver all of our power demand while also charging up the energy storage would mean overbuilding our system many times, adding to the already huge costs. So as a result, an overbuilt system of wind and solar would sometimes deliver many times our power demand, and at other times none of it. So a system that relies on wind and or solar power exclusively, and then has large-scale energy storage plus a geographically dispersed energy transmission network to channel power from where it's needed to where it's used, would probably end up being 10 to 40 times more expensive than an equivalent nuclear-powered system, and still less reliable. Now, all of these factors mean that the cost of using wind power or solar power to avoid generating carbon dioxide can be very high if you try and account for overbuild and energy storage. Now, some might say, well, surely we could overcome such difficulties with better engineering and integration of geographically and technologically diverse systems, you know, like a mix of wind farms, wave power and solar plants spread out over a large region. But that doesn't escape the point that you have to overbuild massively, and that essentially you have to build enough wind to supply all of your needs when there's no sun, or enough sun to supply it when there's no wind, and so on. It just becomes horrendously expensive. I obviously haven't got time to give all the details, but I can assure you that even back of the envelope calculations show that scaling up and backing up renewable energy to the point where it can reliably and consistently meet all or even most of our power needs ends up involving a range of compounding and quite possibly overwhelming problems. It's just silly to try and do it alone with renewables when we can do it with a mix of nuclear power, renewables and energy storage. So my conclusion is that nuclear power, not renewable energy or any energy efficiency alone, will be a solution to climate change, and indeed probably the primary solution to climate change and the energy crisis. And this conclusion results from me trying to be ruthlessly pragmatic about what will not work in the real world physical, economic and social constraints. If you're serious about solving the climate problem, you must be serious about nuclear power. And in later podcasts, I'll talk more about the potential advantages of pursuing this form of carbon mitigation.